Welcome back to Dang Old Venture Boys. This here is a once in a lifetime podcast. Nope. It's been a minute, guys. It's been a minute since Johnny had to do an intro. Welcome to Dang Old Venture Boys. This is a podcast dedicated to rewatching The Venture Bros, that beloved animated classic off of Adult Swim by Doc Hammer and a bunch of other guys. I didn't even say the most important one here. Okay, that's cool. Guys, Johnny's had a little bit to drink already today. It's fantastic. But he's always here, not by himself, but with his best buddy and co-host.
Mark.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to get cheeky.
I realize as I'm editing these, I don't know how to make my name have more. I always sound so low energy when we start this. And it's because my name is literally one friggin' syllable. And, how do you say that with, pep and zazz? I don't know.
Right. Unless you're, intentionally trying to elongate it. You know, you could always do a Mark. But then it sounds like a question.
Mark, really I'm Ron Burgundy? Yeah.
Exactly. But then if you say it really fast and descending, you just go, Mark. Mark. Then it's just angry, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Reminds me of a joke my dad used to tell. What does a hair-lipped dog say? Mark. Mark.
Oh. Ouch.
His name was
ouch,
Mark, ouch, too. Ouch. So, you know, I guess if nothing else, the Jones Boys are into that self-deprecating humor. But we're not talking about the Jones Boys. We're talking about the Dang Old Venture Boys there, Johnny.
Why, yes, we are. All right, everybody. We are going to just hop right in. We are on episode 11, past tense. So why don't we tune in our communicator watches. This is a disclaimer for anybody who hasn't watched the episode. If you don't want the episode ruined for you, Johnny's going to give a recap here. So pause your podcast and go give it a watch. Okay, Mark. Doc and the crew are on their way to a funeral for an old acquaintance and happen to land in a grave situation. A reconvening of college friends and some reminiscing results in an abduction. The boys work on a rescue plan while Brock, White, Werner, and Doc wake up in a basement straight out of a 90s Nazi video game. We get the reassembly of the classic Team Venture and the addition of everyone's favorite non-Dracula, Dr. Orpheus. We find out that Werner almost killed Soriyama by letting him smoke some oregano, and that Soriyama holds similar grudges against all of his former classmates. We get some cheeky editing between flashback and reality as Brock rampages in both timelines. White and Werner are left behind after we get our satisfying end here. I don't know how satisfying it really is, but it's an ending, right? Okay. So, cast, our notables, first appearances in this episode. We have, the various different college students, Leslie Cohen, Mike Soriyama, Otto Aquarius, State University is pretty notable here, because we go back to that a couple of different times. This is a huge, lore-heavy episode.
Yeah, right? Yeah, background
we're
for all the
really
guys.
We're really digging into, let's give fan service when we don't even really have any rights to give fan service yet, because we're not even a full season in. But hey, why not? Let's just explore this. It's kind of what it feels like. I heard this term the other day, and I'm not exactly sure what it means.
Okay.
I heard somebody say that they wanted a rusty venture. What's a rusty venture?
Oh, rusty ventures. I have also heard of these. And as far as I know, a rusty venture is like when you reconvene with your college buddies. Maybe it's a reunion, maybe somebody got married, hell, maybe it is a funeral, and you guys get to kind of reminiscing, and the past is kind of hazy. Of course it is, but you remember the good times, and then you sit down to play a rousing game of Magic the Drunkening and make up a batch of jungle juice, and you don't know what happened 20 years ago, and you don't know what happened the night before, but either way, your head hurts, and you feel like an idiot, but God, it's just good to have friends again.
Indeed.
Guys, I'm gonna start a podcast segment.
Right. And you just can't get enough, so you start it with two others, and now we have a podcast empire. It's just what it is. Rusty Ventures are our standout moments and jokes of the episode. Mark, would you like to start us off? Or would you like me to start us off?
Yeah, why don't you take this one away? I don't know if you start these that often. Yeah, take it away.
I don't know if I do, but I definitely want to say that Brock has got some sort of fortitude. He definitely made it with some sort of aunt, queen, woman thing. And I don't even want to know what in the name of super science is going to come out of that. Like, wow. Just wow. Right? Like, I have a feeling we could make some sort of a misdirected Brendelfly joke off of Jeff Goldblum here, but I don't want to know whatever that would look like. Gah. Ah. And also, this gave me a weird, like kind of want thing, right? If I was to ever be able to play God and just, like, just think of things and have it be happen just to see what was going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of want to see what would happen if you took, like, a medium to smallish sized meteor, right? Like one that's going to not do a huge chunk of damage. You know, we're not talking about like instigating earthquakes here, but a decent amount, right? It's going to leave a more than a significant crater. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to see what happens if you plop that in the middle of an established graveyard. Like after the opening of this episode, I just kind of want to see what would happen. Like, would you see chunks of wood and shit flying everywhere? Would it mostly just be dirt? Like, how evenly would it be spread? I don't know.
It's really weird though, because we both have like odd background in this. You with your, you know, when you were the Undertaker, and me with my, I didn't really get into meteor like ballistics and shit, but like I know that a dab will literally do you when it comes to meteors. Like you can make a crater.
Yeah.
You can make a like a football sized field crater out of like a it's like a what a like a meter long meteor. So like just like 3 foot across is enough to produce like a football field size impact. So weird that we both know about this but don't know about it. But God help me, I want to find out.
Right. I got one more in here and then we'll toss it off to you because you know me, I like to be kind of somewhat politically correct, and we had a very politically incorrect moment here that got said not once but twice. Tiny, chiny, chubby. Oof.
I like how that's the one you're offended by.
He's not even Chinese. Oh, poor Soriyama. What do you got, buddy? What are some of your rusty ventures?
Number one, Kano's racial handicap tells him that he can't drive. Ooh, low blow there. Ooh. I also like how problematic the OG Venture Squad is because, hey, guess what, gang? Cartoons from the 60s and 70s were problematic as all hell.
Yep.
But that doesn't matter. Brock nailed the Ant Queen, and as you were talking about it, you played Fallout 3, right?
I have played Fallout. It's been a minute since I played Fallout 3, like almost a decade now, but yes.
Do you remember the war between the robot lady and the antagonizer?
Not as well as I probably should.
It's a throwaway quest. Like, you go and there's two villains that one controls Protectorons and the other one controls giant fire ants. But the one that controls the giant ants is called the antagonizer. And when you kill him and get his armor, it gives you, like, a plus 10 to strength or some shit. And then I got to thinking about it. So you cross the Ubermenschian muscles of one Brock Samson, the Swedish murder machine, with the strength of an ant. So where do you get your base strength from? Because is it Brock Samson or a giant ant? I don't care, but I want to see Brock's ant child reappear. And, like, it's a consequence later on because he fucked the Ant Queen and messed up that DNA pool. I was good this time. I wasn't good. My Japanese is a little bit better this time around. Soriyama means sky mountain, but there's also a fun Easter egg that we can get into later. Give it up, kid. Or you might be a big shot back in your country, but here you're just a kid with a weird smelling lunch. That's fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Because racism can work in every direction. I always go back to Uter on The Simpsons and, would you like more of my Krankenstick or whatever the hell it's called?
My flavor pop?
Thank you. I don't know why it's
my Matsupan joy choice.
Meet iodine. Hilarious. I didn't realize that Orpheus with his not Dracula powers is also just essentially Orochimaru.
I'm finally, sidebar for a second, I'm finally to the point where he's not a giant dickweed. And yet every time he shows up in Naruto Shippuden where I'm at, I just keep going, God, this motherfucker has been around for so long. He's been annoying as fuck since the Chunin exams. Go away. Yes. Sorry. But anyway, and sidebar.
Oh, no. Sidebar accepted and valid. There was a lot of throwaway gags in here, but I think my favorite one is that Brock killed two dervishes last week. You know what a dervish is, right?
I have heard of it. It sounds like a cryptid thing, right?
Nah, so it's a Middle Eastern deal, and what it is like a kind of meditation where these I guess you just call them monks. I don't know what you call them. Practitioners of whatever, they take the big curved swords and they just kind of spin in a circle, and like in the spinning they like attain like a sense of like meditation and balance and shit. It's really cool. Ooh. But it's where we get our term for a whirling dervish. And yeah, it's okay, kind of a racist term, but it's whatever. They're neat. If you can find enlightenment by spinning in a circle with a sword, sign me the hell up. But also Metal Mandingo. Oh my God. Which means it's a giant metallic black dude with a huge penis that has sex with all the white women, because the Mandingo film series of blaxploitation films, which, yeah, kids, mm-hmm. they're problematic as all fuck, but go watch them because they're amazing and they're hilarious. And I don't, if they're just great.
Blaxploitation is absolutely one of the best things to ever come out of the 70s. And I think most black people, you know, will tell you that.
Hear, hear. And then finally, I really, really like the cutting between old Brock and new Brock in that last little fight there.
Okay.
Yep. And also, nice. I have our first ever venture retraction. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I went back and rewatched that episode with the Joy-Can. He's not saying, Tommy isn't saying underwear. He's saying wrong.
Oh, okay.
So he's telling Brock that he fucked up.
Yeah.
Which, my bad, guys. My bad. I haven't had to sign in years, so, you know, it's not perfect in there. Just like my Japanese made me miss, you know, Captain Thousand Strokes, but it's all right. We're getting better every day.
It's true. Not to mention you're big enough to be able to retract yourself. No worries, buddy. Here. And no, that wasn't a sex thing. I have a couple more Rusty Ventures for you here. First off,
I only retract myself
when
it's too cold in the pool. What?
I was in the pool! One of these days, if I maintain my current physical stature, right, for the rest of my life, because I am not a small human by any means, I'm definitely a lot bigger than I should be. But if I just maintain this, then one of these days I want to get to Kano's age and have somebody call me a stalwart old man mountain. Because that's astounding. Like, just astounding. I love it. I'd rather be that than the stalwart old molehill.
Aw.
I love the random kid. You mean Professor Soriyama? Like, that whole little bit? He's okay, but in the end, after he hears the action man about practically shit his pants, he just goes, dude, you beefed. I'm going to start saying that every time I hear my significant other let one rip. you beefed. I really like... Sorry, buddy. I really like the animation and effort that went into the classic Go Team Venture moment with all the original members, right? Like, we get the old insignia and all that shit. Like, oh, that's so fucking cool. I also love that all these guys decided to put on the Leslie Bot singlets. Like, we've got the Soriyama bot at this point that's ordering them to kill Samson, and he just pans to them and they're all trying to squeeze into some of this robot gear and they put on the singlets. Oh, it's just great. my last one here is, I'm curious what you think. Okay. You and I have talked quite a bit about exploring the past or like doing these kind of lore deep diving things in other shows, specifically King of the Hill. But you and I've talked about it a whole bunch of times, right? I know we've talked about some of the older episodes of like when the Simpsons go back to high school and shit like that.
Right.
How do you feel this episode does as far as like, does this feel fan servicey to you? Or do you feel like since it's early enough in this that it's cool? Yeah, we're learning about characters.
No, would you say this was episode number 11, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, no, I think that this is I think that this is us learning about these characters, and this is how you, I think this is how you do it right more than anything. There's no fan service here. It's kind of, yeah, it is ridiculous that they all went to college together, but like, it's really funny, you know, like, and Hank or Dean even calls it out, like, what did you go to, University of Weirdos? And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Right? Well, and I love that they allude to the Monarch, but they never actually show him, right? They talk about the guy with the crazy eyebrows or whatever in art class. But no, this is not the only time you're going to go back to State University. There's a couple other episodes that revolve around the older incidents that happened back then. But I was just kind of curious because to the outside observer, this may seem like that, right? It may seem very fan servicey because, well, why not just cram every single villain and person that we've already introduced into this one sequence already? Or this one episode. But I like that because it's so early in here. I also like you feel like this isn't super fan servicey. It is. It's establishing characters and kind of letting you know, oh, well, Doc Venture knows Pete White and knows, like, he's not the best of guys. Like, he screwed around with him and got high with him and played D&D with him in college. So when he doesn't want to give poor Conjectural Technologies any business, you know it's a little bit personal because White's kind of a piece of shit and he knows it.
Right, I like it. I think it's a good way to do it.
Exactly. Just like White knows if he doesn't get the job, yeah, it's because Rusty sucks. So, no, it's good stuff. I was just kind of curious. I feel like it's a double-edged sword sometimes when you really want to explore that background with people. Mm-hmm. And it can get kind of fan service-y at points, but who knows? Maybe I'm used to watching too much other animated stuff. Anime is really bad about some of that, right? Like, you know, specific episodes where they have to shoehorn in every single character, like, oh, okay, yeah, you did this because people want to see more of this character.
I think the only time it really works out is like with Futurama, like the Why of Fry, you know, when we see like Nibbler put him shit that they said again, you know, you set up, we talk a lot in a show the kids set up payoff, like, and that's what this does. I think we even call back to, you know, a couple episodes with Brock and the Joy Can, like, he remembers that moment, and Doc even brings up, now, you may or may not know that Brock had just gotten kicked off the team. Like, yeah, I think it works really well. I don't think it's heavy-handed, and I think it's a good way to deliver, like, background without being exposition-y, but it's like, well, who is this guy, Dad? Oh, I went to college with him, he's a weird... The way that you would explain to your kids, like, so, wait, who's this Uncle Mark guy? Oh, Marin, he's a weird cat, but I went to college with him, and at best, he had a good heart. At worst, he had bad kidneys, but yeah.
He was a lecherous old fool, and yet I knew him briefly. Well, buddy, what do you say we scoot on over to parodies and references? As always, I have our tried-and-true list from the wiki waiting in the wings, but I want to see what we pulled first. You want to start? You want me to start? I got a bunch in here, actually.
I got a ton, too. Why don't we just shotgun these back and forth? But I'm going to start off with, we know, okay, so I'm also calling this shot for next episode when Monarch references Frank Frazetta drew Mrs. Etheria's costume, right? I really like pulp art to that end. I am a huge fan of Heavy Metal Magazine. You better believe it, the name Sorayama perked up my ears and then it perked him up even further when Doc Venture goes, yeah, we all saw the magazine. And it's like, wait, we have. You look up Hajime Soriyama. He drew sexy robot ladies in the November 1980 Heavy Metal. And
nice. Okay.
His sexy robot ladies are the sexy robot ladies. It's like that character design for the, what's her name?
The Leslie Sandra Bots.
Leslie Cohen. Yeah, the Leslie Bots.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. I got one in here that I'm not quite sure, so there's a question mark at the end of it, but I have to imagine that Doc Venture, good old Rusty, is trying to stand out and make himself look like the intellectual that he probably should be, and he doesn't want to be a scientist like dear old Dad, because little dear old Dad kind of scarred him for life on that. So what's the opposite of a scientist, Mark? somebody who is a creative, somebody who dabbles in what they, you know, what they can control, not what is just going to be there. It needs to be observed. So I have to imagine that he started calling himself T.S. after T.S. Eliot, possibly. Like, I don't know. What do you think there? I don't understand where else the T.S. comes from.
Well, because his first name is Thaddeus. Do we know, yes, Doc Venture's middle name?
Maybe.
Like, honestly, without looking, I don't know, and I without feel like a terrible looking it up, host. Yeah. Not, dude. It's, who knows middle names? Like,
yeah.
Unless it's, you know,
I mean,
a plot point of Hank Rutherford Hill, Dale Alvin Gribble, Highness. Yeah,
Homer J. Simpson,
Harriet R. Hippopotamus.
Anyway, maybe I'm just up my own ass today. It's fine. I'm almost to the bottom of my asphalt that I'm drinking here, so it's good.
The fault in our ass. I'm just gonna knock these out in one fell swoop. The posters in the dorm rooms, you fucker, you brought her. Posters in the dorm rooms, when it's Doc Venture in there, I saw a Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon, a Led Zeppelin 2, and I'm pretty sure it's either a Rush or a Yes, or it's a combination of the two, because, like, you can't tell, but that's that weird oogly whoopy schloopy print, but it looks a lot like Rush or Yes. I don't know. But then in the modern day, he's homeboy's got a Lord of the Rings and a Boba Fett poster.
Nice. Okay. Excellent. I have to imagine that somebody's haircut, I think it was Werner, they make fun of his haircut and something to that effect. But I'm like, God, this dude straight up looks like he was modeled off of Pete Rose. Like, I feel like I'm just watching a German Pete Rose.
The corrupt, so I don't know if that's
an intentional reference, but he wasn't a commissioner. He was a coach? Player for the Cincinnati Reds.
I don't know. I don't know baseball, John.
He's one of like 10 people to ever be permanently and lifetime banned from the MLB because he was not fixing games, but allegedly betting on games that he was playing in. And then oop, that's a no-no.
Point shaving. Yeah, okay. Allegedly. But yeah, they're making fun of Unterbite, and then that's when Soriyama pops up and he's like, hey man, there's nothing wrong with this haircut. It's like, oh, you can't be blamed what your hair does on its own. It's like, okay, well, problematic, yeah. But also I've heard that Asian hair is notoriously hard to cut from hairdressers, so bear that as thou wilt.
Yes. Alright, what else you got, buddy?
Horace is 1,000% Sean Connery. It gotta be, right? He even talks about how he's MI6, or he talks about MI5, I think. But, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got the accent, like... Gotta just be 1,000% there. He was just doing his best Sean Connery. And then, to that end, Otto is Namor? Question mark? Because he's half Atlantean? Because, like, Namor is more fishy than Aquaman is. So, I don't know.
Yes.
If we're drawing illusions, we've already seen the Venture jammies of Aquaman, so, like, we know what that is, so that's why I think it's not Aquaman.
Right. Well, and to me, it seems more like Abe Sapien, but I also did just rewatch Hellboy, so maybe that's... It's just, like, character design looks more like him, but...
Yeah, same. I took that, too, but I'm like, but Abe Sapien is, like, a... fish man, not Atlantean. I don't know. Fighting with yourself internally about, like, how nerdy you can out-nerd your own brain, and I'm just like, calm down, Mark, it's 6 in the morning, just drink some more coffee and call it good.
Yes. So, speaking of our good old Otto Aquarius here, he's either a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon, right? Like, the idea of going up, ding-donging somebody's door and asking them if they, you know, want eternal salvation. I don't know if he uses that as exact word, but I've heard it a million times anyway.
Yeah, I'd even just say he's a milquetoast Christian. It seems like pretty basic. I don't know, but I think you're right. Jehovah's Witness probably, because they're, you know, they actually do good. I don't know. I've had Christians down here come to my door and I throw the goats at them and close in their face, but.
I almost was going to say he's got to be Mormon because, you know, the Venture's, like, the Venture compound's in Colorado, but he's not at the Venture compound.
Yeah, don't they pick him up in New York?
I think so. So I don't know, maybe Jehovah, who knows? But I just, yeah. I figured, like, you know, that door-to-door Christian salesman bit.
Yeah. Proselytizing.
All right, go ahead, buddy. What else you got?
I think that was all that I had. I'm sure that the neck chains is a reference to one I just don't remember.
Oh, okay, the ones that, like, attached to each other?
Yeah. I can't think of what it would be. I don't know. I don't have perfect chain recall. What do you got, dude? And I mean, like there's the big ones, too, like Dungeons & Dragons. And I can also tell you that I have gotten drunk and fought a tree one time because it fucking ran into me, so I pulled it out of the ground. I'm not proud of it, but I did.
Leslie Golem on it.
And I did not.
What the hell is a Leslie Golem? I noticed that Otto Aquarius sounds an awful lot like Otto Octavius, and I don't know if that was a potential nod to Doc Ock. I just thought that was kind of cute. You hit D&D and the Leslie Golem already, and well, you hit D&D, I hit the Leslie Golem, and it's just fine. And then we have a callback to an earlier episode where we hear Pete White talk about his old radio show called The White Room, which is an Eric Clapton reference.
Cream.
For one of the songs. It's probably his most famous song with Cream.
Yep.
So.
In the white room with black curtains at the station. Yep. Okay. Yep.
Anyway, references according to the wiki, we have 50 Cent. Several of the posters can be seen in Doc Venture's old dorm room. One of them reads 60 Cent.
Okay.
So there you go. Talk about dervishes. A reference to 1983's Bad Boys, in which Sean Penn fought using a pillowcase full of cokes as a weapon. Okay. And Hank claims that Brock killed two dervishes with a pillowcase full of cokes.
Yep.
Like Coca-Cola's. Damn, that's hardcore. Reference to Battlestar Galactica with the oregano bong. The bong that they're smoking out of.
Oh, it's a Cylon.
Series Cylon. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
They mentioned Blade Runner, and I didn't particularly note that, but you and I both could have. Because Soriyama talks about how the robots in Blade Runner looked really cool, but in fact they are organic constructs and not mechanical robots. You already hit Boba Fett, which is excellent. Jonas Venture is in part a parody of the pulp hero Doc Savage and the original Team Venture, serving as a parody of Doc Savage's companions in adventure known as the Fabulous Five.
Oh, shit, it is Doc. Okay, it is. Okay, yeah. My granddad, so he used to read Doc Savage comics, and he had a couple that he let me, like, I don't know how he held on to them, but they might have been my uncle's that I think he bought for him and then, like, just kept them around. But he was, oh, wow, that's a deep cut memory, John. Thank you for reminding. Wow, cool. Thank you. Huh, neat. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, dude, you're good. We already hit D&D. Apparently there's a Fargo reference here. Mike Soriyama is based on the character of Mike Yaganita from that 1996 film Fargo, and the comedian Steve Park portrays both characters.
Oh, interesting.
It's been a long time since I watched Fargo, so I might have to go back and do that. There is a reference to Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, with Colonel Gentleman using the expression, despite his racial handicap. This was taken from the character of Raoul Duke in Hunter S. Thompson's semi-autobiographical novel, Fear and Loathing.
Okay.
A reference to the movie from 1930, Gladiator. But we've already hit this, I believe, where Brock Samson
before,
kills Tommy.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. One of the posters on T.S. Venture's dorm room. This will make you feel really happy. One of the posters on T.S. Venture's dorm room wall is based on the prog rock band Gong's 1974 album, You.
That's what it is. Okay.
Yes. Hajime Soriyama, you already hit that with the, called some gynoids? Gynoids?
Yeah, gynoids.
The Leslie bots are essentially gynoids.
Fembots.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. Heavy metal, Highlander, reference to Highlander here.
No, let's see. No, there's not. The That's just because it sounds like Sean Connery and he's in Morocco. Okay, whatever.
No, this is...
Oh.
No, this is Hank entreats Brock to kick his butt, and Brock declines, stating that he won't do anything violent as the church is hallowed ground. This could be a reference to the film Highlander, in which the principal antagonist
they can't fight
each other on holy ground.
Yeah, they can't fight in church. Yeah, that's right. That's where the Kurgan homeboy. Okay.
Yes. Horace Panter, Jackson Public, stated that Colonel Horace Gentleman's name refers to a nickname of Horace Panter, who played bass guitar in the British band The Specials, Mark's absolute favorite genre of music.
Kind of, yeah.
It's really not. You hate ska music. I love The Specials.
Oh, I didn't know. I was like, I thought you were talking about like British rock from the 70s.
No. Well, I mean, but that's like the one band you wouldn't enjoy.
You know what? I have an ongoing list of shit that this show is making me learn about. I'm adding The Specials to it, and I will let you know next week. How about that?
Listen to their song, Little Bitch. It's fantastic. Jehovah's Witnesses. I hit that already, so apparently that's what they think. Aquarius is Jehovah's Witnesses. Naked Lunch. Colonel Gentleman's young manservant, Kiki, is a reference to the character the same name from the William Burroughs novel, Naked Lunch. Pete Rose. T.S. Venture and Pete White laughingly mock Baron Underbite's hairstyle, comparing it to that of disgraced baseball legend Pete Rose.
Yeah, that's why I was confused when you said it. I was like, yeah, you nailed it, dude.
Shit, I promise you guys I wasn't hitting the sauce when I was watching this today. You already hit the Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd cover on the wall. Mm-hmm. Something Wicked This Way Comes. Orpheus takes the Action Man out. Takes the Action Man's hands and declares 2 years, 17 days from a stroke. It's similar to the way a prediction that happens in Bradbury's novel, Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Okay.
They have a spoof to the theme of the Andy Griffith Show that plays as the Venture family leaves the castle in the very end.
Okay.
They have a mention of a wartime consigliere, which is a reference to The Godfather.
You're not a wartime consigliere, Hank.
Right. In reference to Incredible Hulk, T.S. Venture and Pete White laughingly mock Underbite's hairstyle, comparing it to that of Incredible Hulk's titular character as portrayed by Lou Ferrigno. Do you know he was deaf? It's hard for me to take him as seriously.
Deaf people are gross.
Sorry, it's a Roger quote. That's from the pilot of American Dad that I've seen 100 times.
I was doing Archer, but yeah.
Yep, you're good. The Invisibles. Upon finding Rusty's missing molar in his old dorm room, Kano proffers a piece of origami to Colonel Gentleman, who replies, "No, Kano, I don't think the time machines figure into this caper." It refigures.
Oh!
The origami figure resembles a similar one from the Grant Morrison comic book, The Invisibles.
Have you read The Invisibles? Because you really should. You really should.
I have not. Like, but
that
I like
is my
Grant
wizardly
Morrison,
recommendation
so.
For you this year, or this week, is go read The Invisibles.
Excellent. We have Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring poster. We also have the Matrix poster. And in T.S. Venture's dorm room, there's a poster on the wall with a stylized logo that reads, Yeah, Y-E-A, a parody of the logo of the prog rock band Yes. So you're right on two accounts there, buddy.
Okay. So, do you have wiki access like we did with Dangle? Because they missed the Zeppelin 2 poster. Yeah, they missed the Zeppelin 2 poster in there. That's the other one. That's the Hindenburg going down in there.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
I will see if I can add to that again. It's just going to show up as Dangle Podcast that edited it, but that's fine.
That's cool.
Edits are edits, baby. Okay. So, Mark, we are to our next segment here, which is Who's That Guild Member?
Who's That Guild Member?
Who's That Guild Member?
So for this one, it has to be. And I'm so, every time I hear it when I listen to this, it makes me so GD happy, man. Okay, so for this, we have Mike Soriyama and we have State College. And I want to say that State College is the bigger pull here, because we are going to come back here again, right? This is where we're going to learn of one Professor Impossible. We're also going to learn about somebody who eventually turns into the Phantom Limb. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that happens at State College that we will figure out. So, could you think of any other lore-building questions that you got from this? I mean, that's a lot of this episode is kind of reaching back into time.
I mean, yeah, that's 90% of it, right? Is just the lore-building, so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. But I even like how they tie up the loose end of, like, well, wait a minute. Brock got kicked out of college. Yeah, he did. Also, so now we got a timeline of when Doc Venture, or OG Doc Venture died, and that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, with the end credit stinger here.
Yeah. Somebody excellent. From the venture something called, your dad died. It's hilarious.
Oh, poor Rusty. All right. Well, if we don't have any more lore building, then we are to Brock's kill of the week. And I've got two for this episode, one for next episode. So I can save them all till then, or we can do these two and then next one and then decide what our kill of the week is.
So what do you have for this week's episode? Because I have the ass-kicking Echo Across Time in which Brock Samson defeats the whatever the hell they're, the OG Venture Boys, or Venture Team Venture, and the Dungeons & Dragons nerds simultaneously. Okay. Yeah.
So I have that as well. I have it destroying the OG Ventures and Soriyama Bot, because he actually kills the Soriyama Bot.
He does. Okay.
And then I also have, because we've seen it twice now, but this is a much better kind of indication of him just popping off Tommy the quarterback.
Okay.
I feel like we saw a little bit more of it in this week than we did the last time we saw Tommy in the Joy-Can. I think we are to rankings then. What do you say, buddy? We're not. We're to Two Wizards did it. Mark, have Two Wizards covered anything that we talked about? God, I'm like the worst co-host.
No, you're not. Yes, how dare you forget to plug the other show that I'm on. Yeah, you dick.
I'm the second worst co-host.
Listeners, who do you think is the first worst co-host? The answer is me. We did Robots and Golems extensively when Josh piloted the AI episode about a year ago this time. We did three episodes about ghosts. Go check those out, because they're all super stupid. I recommend the Animal Ghosts episode, because I get to talk about Martin, the ghost of a masturbating monkey. And then also, we did an entire one about sunken civilizations, including but not limited to the sinking of Atlantis. So, yeah, there's Two Wizard spices all over this dune, I reckon.
May thy knife chip and shatter. Excellent. Well, hey, we are to rankings and upcoming, wow. What the fuck is wrong with me? We're to rankings, buddy.
You just drank a pound of scotch. That's what's wrong with you. It's okay.
That is, God. Guys, if I sound stupid, I want you to direct every single complaint to my lady wizard this week. Like, please. She poured the wrong alcohol into my coffee, and so the only way for me to make this better was to pour more alcohol into my already alcoholic coffee. And hot damn, did it mess me up quite a bit. Anyway.
Join us next week on Two Wizards when Johnny comes on for a talk about alchemy and how it doesn't work.
God. I thought you were going to say alcoholism and how it's a problem.
No, that's what fuels this podcast network.
We have our moments here. Anyway, let's talk about our ranking system and how fucked up you need to be to enjoy an episode, because that's a perfect segue. At the very bottom, you have your must-haves. These are our episodes that are not very good, and you must absolutely have something in your system in order to enjoy it. These are some of our downer episodes. They don't have a lot going on in them. They're kind of hard to track and follow, and you know, it's just going to be a little bit better if you're quite a bit high or quite a bit drunk. After that, you got your dabble do yous. And this means that, it's not a necessary requirement, but it actually would help quite a bit if you did have something in your system. After that, you got your fun additions. These are episodes that don't necessarily need any sort of imbibement with them. Our fun addition episodes are very good on their own. They're pretty solid standalones. But, you know, it never hurts to add a little something extra sometimes, and these are our good examples of that. After that, you got your very, very good episodes, which are not necessaries. This means it's absolutely not necessary to watch this with anything in your system, right? You can watch them stone sober, and you're gonna laugh yourself to sleep, and you're gonna giggle, and who knows what else is gonna happen. I don't know what you guys do when you watch TV shows. It's fine. After that, you got your hurts to indulge, and these are our very best episodes. These are the ones where it actually is going to hurt you in order to not pay attention to the episode, right? There's going to be some in-jokes, or there's going to be some sort of lore build, everything else. It's going to hurt you not to have the like, attention span to watch this episode. So, Mark, on that scale here, we've got must-haves to hurts to indulge. What do you give this episode?
Well, I am going to give this one a hurts to indulge. There is a lot of lore building. There is a lot of background. Hell, there's even a callback to an earlier episode that if you're not all there, you're not going to get all of it. So that's where I am coming down.
Excellent. I love to hear it. There's a lot of very funny stuff in this episode, I feel like.
Yes, there is.
I gave a different take to this, and it helps because I'm gonna disclaim myself here. Guys, I've seen this episode many times before, and I've seen through the whole series many times before. So for me, personally, this is a Dabble Do Ya episode, right? This is one where I actually am going to want to be a little messed up because I already know what the connections are. For somebody like Mark, who's never really seen a lot of this show, I'm very proud to see that you put this as a hurts to indulge, because I feel like on a first viewing, it would be for me. But on like a sixth or seventh viewing like this is a Dabble Do Ya for me. I want a little bit more to laugh at sometimes. And I think those moments that I really get a tickle out of, right? Like watching Soriyama almost die because he's got oregano that he's allergic to, that he's just like, oh, oregano, allergic. And he's just like dying, but happy and
so
laughing
on
the ground. Like, it's funny. It's funny as hell to me. The idea that he gets so pissed off that Doc Venture is trying to seduce his Leslie Golem in D&D. Very funny. Even funnier if you're a little more fucked up. You know? So, yeah. Good stuff.
Hey, so we are firmly cemented as being nerds. Do you have the funniest breaking your DM's D&D moment?
Oh, it's been a long time. I will say the funniest thing I think I've ever heard of is I saw somebody was telling me their obscene luck when it came to D&D, and essentially what the DM required of them to do, because they wanted to summon a minor god to do something very trivial for them, because they were just like, yeah, I've got like the ability, like my character's a caster character, and I've got the ability to converse with at least his underlings, so if I roll high enough, I should be able to like convince them to directly contact him to do my bidding for me and all this shit. It was something obnoxious of like, I want you to like tie my shoes, right? Like somebody was real jacked up and they're like, yeah, my character's shoes are untied and I want this minor deity to come and tie them for him. Like I'm going to summon him from the ethereal plane to do that shit. And it required some obscene roll. Like you had to roll 3 or 4 d20s and get a minimum roll of like 17, 18, or 19 with all of them, and a nat 20 would like essentially add only a plus one to your next roll. And they rolled 3 nat 20s in a row
and managed
to like actually summon this. And I'm like, good God, this is obscene.
Holy shit. All right.
They actually made it work. And I'm like, okay, this is just absolutely silliness. And I'm so proud to know that people's weird imagination goes this far. What about you? What's your like fun, ridiculous D&D moment?
It was a second edition game, so rules were different. But we were in an underground. It wasn't the Underdark, but it was basically the Underdark. And there was an orc fortress. I was a half orc, and we had somehow lucked our way into killing the guards at the portcullis, while the other, I don't know, there's a patrol out or some shit, right? Patrol rolls back up on us, or patrol returns to the castle thing, and I go, there's a wizard in here, and he's attacking us. We need you to go around the back and rout and kill the guys that the wizard is mind-controlling. And I did it by taking an orc's head and using it as a marionette puppet, and like, I had like 8 charisma and I somehow rolled a nat 20 on it and it worked, and the DM was super pissed because it was supposed to be this like long ass fucking encounter and it ended in like 10 minutes because the patrol of orcs killed the castle full of orcs and it was hilarious.
Excellent.
Ventriloquism for the win.
Absolutely.
Where's Gabbo? All right, buddy, who's Gabbo?
Gabbo this and Gabbo that, when they should be saying worship this. And Jericho that. Guys, we're going to take a small break here. Johnny needs to go get some just regular unadulterated coffee to kind of sober his ass up a minute. But we'll see you in just a few minutes for our next episode.
Enjoy some hot action cop, feel for the flavor. Can I get a little zip, zip? Looky, looky, maybe just a little
nookie, nookie. Hey, what you say? It doesn't matter anyway. You won't do another clue, so get with me. You got the power.
Okay. Well, now that we're back from the sunny shores of Benson, Arizona, we're going to jump right into Season 1, Episode 12, The Trial of the Monarch. So, Mark, why don't we tune our communicator watches right in to this episode? The Monarch is on the ropes in the legal system for something the Venture Brothers alleged. We find that the Monarch is not as friendly with the Guild as he could be. He's also a terrible self-defense attorney. There's been a fallout between him and Dr. Girlfriend after he finds out about her sordid past with supervillains including Phantom Limb and Monstroso. The previous day's events unfold through a series of witnesses, but we still can't figure out what happened to that poor policeman. It must be pretty serious, though, because the Guild has sent operatives to infiltrate the court. We find out their real target is Tiny Attorney, and the Guild concludes its business after some hypnotic suggestion.
Yeah, sounds good to me, man. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so our cast, notables, and first appearances. This is almost more important than some of the stuff we saw last episode for lore building's sake, if you will, because you're going to see a lot of people here that you haven't before and you will continuously going forward, right? So, according to the wiki, our notables and first appearances in this episode, we have the Guild Strangers, which are their kind of like underlings. It's the name for their henchmen. We have a mention of Monstroso. We have a mention of Tim, Tom, and Kevin, which you don't know their names specifically yet, but you will. They are the murderous Moppets that used to work for Dr. Girlfriend. They will come back, and you are going to love them, and I'm very, very excited about that. First appearance of The Flight of the Monarch, the book. First appearance of The Sovereign, which is the de facto leader of the Guild of Calamitous Intent. We have our first appearance of Tiny Attorney, Ward, and Watch, which are the two strangers that are kind of in charge of like communication. So the ones that are talking back and forth, like, you left like 10 seconds ago. Are you pissing in the corner? Like those two guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think the court is going to need you to define something for me, Mark. And that is, what is a Rusty Venture?
As your surprise expert witness here, Rusty Venture is when you had an aforementioned Rusty Venture with all your college buddies, and you're trying to explain to your significant other, partner, wife, whatever you want to call it, about the things you were doing, and you realize that you can't tell her everything, so you decide to embellish some of the details, and then she totally calls you out because there's no way in hell that I put you up on my shoulders and we made the form of Mecha Shiva.
Damn you for taking my first one here. I want you to tell me your first one so that I can just go in the background and go, Mecha Shiva, Mecha Shiva, Mecha Shiva,
Mecha Shiva,
for like a solid
Mecha Shiva.
For 30 straight seconds. It's mine too. Mecha Shiva, Mecha Shiva. I lost my shit and I was already under a time crunch today and still rewound this so that my lady could watch it with me. Oh, God, we start so strong in this episode.
This is
so,
such
so
a great...
strong.
Yeah, Indiana Hank and Ron Howard Dean are just... Oh, my God.
All right, give me some Rusty Ventures, buddy. We'll give you a couple from you, and then I'll give you a couple of mine.
So, I don't have that many Rusty Ventures because I had to, like, sit and watch this one because I was like, wait, what is going... This is where the nested timelines get wonky, and I don't like it as well. And it's whatever; it is what it is. And I'm not complaining. Please don't think I'm complaining.
You have a right to complain.
Well, no, it's not complaining. It's just this one was weirder. This is a differenter format than we've seen. I like how it's, you know, separate from everybody's, you know, perspective. That's pretty cool. It is a general sweeping pro for me. The use of So the animation style in that beginning with Hank and Dean's recalling. Number one, I'm glad they're testifying together. That's hilarious. But number two, like, it's just I just like the way it is. And, like, you know, the Monarch even calls him out. I was cool with him knowing Sanskrit and wanting a piece of the guy, but this is ridiculous. That's really good.
Mecha Shiva.
I like Orpheus coming in and reading the mind. That's really funny. We get like the actual true accounting of what happened. You get Dr. Girlfriend's accounting of the events. You get the Monarch's accounting of the events. I like it. It's fine. It honestly though, like, and I'm not trying to be inflammatory or a jerk here. This feels to me like the last act of a bad Adam Sandler movie because we end it in a courthouse. Because so many Adam Sandler movies end in a courthouse. And it's cool, whatever. This is also, like, action that we need to call down upon. And then I was kind of disappointed because, like, so last episode, we have the bit, well, who kidnapped our dad? And they call the Monarch and he goes, that's not me. I've got a deal next week. And I'm like, was the deal this trial? That's kind of funny. And there was, like, zero continuity. I'm like, oh, that sucks. All right, never mind. But, like, whatever. That's just me being shitty about it. But then my only other real Rusty venture is him yelling at Dr. Girlfriend and saying, you can see your dirty pillows, which is the greatest, worst way to refer to breasts. I love it. And then also is a sweeping con egg salad sandwiches. Huh, fart sandwiches. Better hold your nose, bud. That's pretty good.
Go in for the cookies. Yes. Exactly. Okay.
That's just because egg salad is nasty as shit. Yeah, what do you got, man?
Speaking as somebody who is not allergic to eggs, I disagree, but I understand where you're coming from. So I've got quite a few
Somebody who has lived with you after you've eaten eggs, I disagree with your disagreeing. Fucking fart sandwiches, bud.
Sometimes you got to enjoy your own brand. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. So it definitely started this episode hot with Form of Mecha Shiva. That's so fucking excellent. I love the childish nature that these court proceedings start in, right? Because you would expect the monarch to try and be the adult in the situation just because, hey, his enemy isn't the Venture Brothers, it's Doc Venture, right? But oh no, he absolutely sinks down to their level. Remember that I am rubber and you are glue, and whatever bounces off of me sticks to you. Like, that whole shit. I adore that, because it tells me so much about him as a character. Oh, so good. I love the tried and true Southern detective stereotype, or Southern attorney stereotype, right? You've got your fancy Southern gentleman in his neosucker suit, and he's going to be wilting like this flower in autumn. And yet, you've got this, and what are we going to do? We're going to make it a plot twist. We're going to make this be like some dude's weird abnormal growth that's coming out of a... I don't know what... I don't even know. Like, the guy seems like he's just dead at this point, but I know he's not. I think they call him like an invalid or a retard or something later on.
Well, it's a Quado from Total Recall. I'm pretty damn sure.
Okay. But anyway, I love
the
reactor.
Yeah.
I want to fight the lady in the back of this courtroom that has no business being there anyway and just tell her, what sort of Pez are you eating that tastes like soap? You're probably just eating tiny little decorative soaps because Pez is delicious.
Which is weird because I had... candy. No, you're fine, because I almost wrote the note of, yeah, Pez do kind of taste soapy.
Interesting. Could have fucking... Maybe it's a thing like cilantro, right? Where
I was just going to say, you reckon it's like cilantro? It? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It... maybe. Who knows? okay, so you don't have any more Rusty Ventures, right? I can just keep on trucking along here?
Yeah, run wild, son.
Perfect. The Monarch and his discovery, and he says, this may look like a book, but it is not, in fact, a book. You know, it's written like that, and one would think that when you look at it, oh, yes, I could probably read this. This is a suicide note! It's just like... I just lost my shit. I forgot that this was even a thing, right? The Flight of the Monarch, I forgot this was a thing. And so the fact that 21 and, was it 27, I believe? His two, Ray Romano and his other head henchman guy, are somehow involved in the writing of this. Also forgot about that. Forgot about the resolution of the guy just getting socked in the back with a note that says, I did it. So screwed up. But, oh, there's just this whole, this isn't a book. This is a suicide note. kills me. I love that the Monarch is so pissed off about this that he's going to continue to torture a dead body, like replacing their blood with acid and then feeding them to sharks and then jumping dumping a gigantic hair dryer into the pool. Like, we're going to just overkill with all of this. That's amazing. I love Hank and Dean talking about nature's adhesive and nature's candy with spit and raisins and their little hair trick, immediately getting denied because Orpheus has just blown up the bathroom after Taco Bell. He named it, not me. That's hilarious to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, Mark, I need to know, what are the hard chunks that are on the Madame Wisteria's costume? What are the hard chunks?
I think you're thinking Etheria, and that would be semen.
Etheria.
Johnny, that would be Thank semen. You. That would... Oof. The costume is acting as a dream catcher, I reckon.
Hmm. Well, just don't put them anywhere near my sea people, because I don't want to have little tiny things put together.
Is that why they taste so soapy?
Wow. Layers upon layers, everybody. Mark, we are to parodies and references. What did you notice in this episode?
So, where I didn't have a lot of Rusty Ventures, I got a crap load of these. Already called out Indiana Hank and Ron Howard Dean.
See, I thought it was Magnum P.I., but I may be wrong. Because I got
Indy, oh, I don't
sure,
know.
But I thought he was Magnum P.I.
No, I think you're right. I saw that caricature, or that I saw the outfit, and it made me think of Ron Howard in The Simpsons.
Oh, see, to me, it's Chip and Dale, because Chip and Dale are also Magnum P.I. and Indiana Jones.
Oh, shit. Okay, I think that's what it is. I think we're both idiots, but we're both right. Yeah, all right, cool.
Okay.
So, I'm 99% sure the giant stone thing they fight is supposed to be Talos, the stone guardian of Crete.
Okay.
You might remember him from such pictures as Jason and the Argonauts, where he's a giant statue that comes to life to fight Jason. Ray Harryhausen classic, kids. Go watch it. You got the Quado lawyer. Already called that out. We mentioned who drew your costume, Frank Frazetta. He's the pulp artist who drew... God, so many of my favorite works of art, and not just the big booby girls, but he did a lot of cool Conan work, a lot of neat stuff. And then to that end, so is that costume really close to Fifth Element? Or is that just me?
Milu? No, I could see it very similar to Fifth Element, yeah.
Okay. Or maybe that's just like, yes, white tape on a body, must be only one thing ever, right?
Right.
Super, super deep cut. I am 90% sure that there is a Kubaz as a bailiff. So in Star Wars A New Hope, the dude with the giant dick nose that drops dime on Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan and Mos Eisley, his name is Kubaz, and he looks just like one of the bailiffs right before they go back into the courtroom.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
Dr. Orpheus swears on a Necronomicon or the Book of the Dead from the Evil Dead franchise.
Excellent.
And then Monarch is talking shit to the cop. He calls him Poncherello. That would be Eric Estrada's character in Chips. And he also calls him Officer Fonzarelli, a reference to Arthur Fonzarelli from Happy Days.
Fucking Fonzie. I'm still so upset with him. Fucking Henry Winkler. I got a beef with you, man. Yes. In multiple shows. He killed multiple of my shows. Bullshit. Anyway.
Listeners, go check out Dangle Podcast Did It. A rover runs through it.
Oh.
What about you, man? What did you notice in this?
So I only had three things that I noticed, and you hit two of them already, because I got Magnum P.I. and Indy Jones, and I also got Chips... Right, the Poncherello with Chips. So Dirty Pillows. That was the only other one that I wasn't quite sure, because I have a feeling like the only other place I've ever heard that referenced, or that I remember it being referenced, is Austin Powers.
Yep.
I want to say it's a second Austin Powers.
Sorry, love, I got stuck in your dirty. Yeah, it's the first one. He's got his face in Mrs. Kensington's, or in Elizabeth Hurley's boobs. Hello, Mommy. I want some chocolate, Mommy. And she pulled, because he got the binocular strap around his neck. Yeah. Sorry, yes. Love. Yeah. I may or may not have just rewatched all those because I needed that nostalgia hit.
I still have only ever seen the third one time. Tell me it's worth rewatching.
Oh my God, fuck you. Yes, they're all so good. Like, oh yes.
God, I love the first two.
I can't wait to show my kids in an epic 3-part episode because Brad refuses to do Austin Powers with me. Austin Powers with you, Johnny. Oh my God, yes. Please and thank you.
When Brad needs a break, we will do a mini marathon. How about that?
Hell yeah, dog. Hell yeah.
All right. Well, those are what I've got here. Those are what you've got there. So why don't we rip straight from the wiki here and see what they got for us.
Let's do her.
All right. Well, right off the bat, I got something wrong here because Dirty Pillows is a reference to, let's see here, the maniacal mother from Stephen King's 1974 novel, Carrie.
How?
Yeah.
But okay.
So it is the term that Carrie's mother uses in the film and in the novel. She refers to breasts as dirty pillows. In the behind-the-scenes footage of fictional live-action Venture Bros. Movie found on the second disc of the season one DVD, Dr. Venture uses the term to describe some of the details of a supposed love scene with Dr. Girlfriend. Interesting.
Okay.
So we have Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Hank and Dean's outfits in their fantasy courtroom testimony evoke Chip and Dale. So Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, which are dressed like Indiana Jones and Thomas Magnum, a.k.a. Magnum P.I. So I'm going to say we both got that. Chip's monarch sneeringly refers to the police officer as Officer Poncherello, Eric Estrada's character. Perfect on you, buddy. Danceteria, the club where the monarch was photographed for making out with Stiv Bators and Lydia Lunch for The Flight of the Monarch, was a famed New York City nightclub that operated in several different locations between 79 and 86.
Okay.
Have you ever watched the movie Dark City, Mark?
Once, maybe.
Okay, the stranger's names, garb, and operations are inspired by the antagonist of that film from 1998. We have a reference... Oh, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. No, okay. No, because I knew they reminded me of something, but that would be it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I need to go back. I've watched Dark City one time when I think I was in cinema class in college, so about a decade ago. And I need to go back and rewatch it, because I remember enjoying it. Okay, we have yet another Bond reference, buddy. We have a reference to Dr. No, 1962. The lowering of the shark. No. The hair across the door is a reference to Dr. No, the very first 007 film in the franchise.
Join us next week when Johnny and I don't really care about sharing our kids all the goddamn James Bond movies so we can pick out all the stupid references in it in this show.
I love Bond. I absolutely don't care if my kids like them or not. I absolutely love Bond. I think they're fantastic. Even the Lazenby
Goldeneye is good. Goldeneye is good and Moonraker is good. That is it.
No, you need to... what was it? Diamonds Are Forever? That is arguably one of the best.
Ugh, I bet you like Odd Job too.
I like Jaws better.
Oh, well, yeah, because Jaws is the fucking man. His name is Jaws. He kills people.
Anyway, we're moving on. Frank Rosetta, you already hit. Happy Days, you already hit. We already hit Indiana Jones. We have Jim G. Thirlwell. The photo of the Flight of the Monarch of Dr. Girlfriend skinny dipping with Jim Fetus is a reference to Jim Thirlwell, a.k.a. Fetus, the influential underground musician who is also the official musical composer for the Venture Brothers.
I knew the Fetus was a reference. I just didn't know what it was, but now we got it. Okay.
J.G. Thirlwell. Yep. All right, Knight Rider. In Hank and Dean's fantasy courtroom testimony, Brock Sampson is dressed as Michael Knight. I knew he was referencing something, and I didn't know what it was. So I apparently am the worst German ever, not knowing Hasselhoff.
The red undershirt and the black leather jacket. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
There's a reference to Lost in Space within this fantasy courtroom testimony, as Helper appears to be modeled after the robot from the 1998 film Lost in Space, not to be confused with the previous TV show Lost in Space, not the same.
Starring one Matt LeBlanc in a very un-Joey Tribbiani-esque role, and you can't take him seriously. Yeah, right. I remember.
We have Lydia Lunch. Flight of the Monarch features a photo of the Monarch making out with Stiv Bators and Lydia Lunch at Danceteria. The poet, singer, actress Lydia Lunch was a lover of and frequent musical collaborator of J.G. Thirlwell in the 1980s. The two of them performed together in a band called The Immaculate Consumptive and released a three-song EP called Stink Fist in 1987. And I am putting that on my Apple Music to listen to because anything called Stink Fist is going to be amazing.
I mean, Tool did it, but yeah, I'm in.
Wait a minute. Tool really has something called Stink Fist?
Well, it's not enough. I need more. Never seem to satisfy. I don't want it. That's the name of the song is Stink Fist, yeah.
Interesting. I don't like
What'd
Tool,
you say it was called? Immaculate Consumption?
Immaculate Consumptive.
Consumptive. Also, what do you mean you don't like fucking Tool?
I don't like Tool. I am one of those assholes that only likes about half of the music that came out of the 90s. I like some of the grunge movement, and I despise most of it.
What? Okay, so what about Perfect Circle? Because I know we've listened to Perfect Circle together.
Perfect Circle is fine.
But it's the same guy. You don't like Tool. Interesting. I'm not calling you out. I'm just curious.
Mark, I love Nirvana and I love Tenacious D, but I can't fucking stand anything else that Dave Grohl does.
Okay, well, I'm not going to fault you.
So there. Like... Anyway, sorry, hot takes here. We already hit Magna P.I. There's apparently Mata Hari. Phantom Limb tells Dr. Girlfriend she was a regular Mata Hari, referencing the Dutch exotic dancer and courtesan who was convicted of being a spy for Germany during World War I and executed via firing squad. The Sovereign's head, as you see him on the screen, is supposed to resemble Zordon from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Interesting. Okay.
You'll see him again, and it'll be way more apparent in later episodes. You already hit the Necronomicon here. Oh, you pretty things. The Guild Strangers are a reference to the lyrics. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay.
That would be a David Bowie song.
1971 song. Yep.
Yeah. Look out my window, what do I see? Belly. A crack in the sky and a hand reaching down for me. The nightmares came today and looks like they're here to stay. Yep. Interesting. Okay.
I was trying to find a way to make a joke about like Tom Petty or anybody else that was going to confuse myself with David Bowie just to make you mad. But I can't even do it every week. That's not fun.
It's also not nice. Like, you shouldn't... I love you. You're my boy, but you shouldn't poke the bear.
I shouldn't, but I'm 5,000 miles away. What's a bear going to do? Come and visit me? Fucking fight me, bro.
I'm a wizard, baby.
We have a reference to...
I have all your fucking raw dangle cuts, dude. You said some horrible things.
I have said some things that could be taken out of context. They're called sound bites, Mark. And I know you do, too.
Yeah, it's called cutting room floor, and I don't have a future to worry about. I'm mutually assured destruction. There's I'm kidding. I would never Rick Nixon you, dude. Dick Nixon you, dude. It's all good.
I know you wouldn't, man. We have a centerfold reference in Flight of the Monarch as he unfolds the several gatefolded pages when he's talking about Dr. Girlfriend with stuff. We have the simple country lawyer trope. This has been embodied in numerous TV shows. Oh, go ahead.
Do you know what that's from? Do you know the patient zero on that one? Because I see it so much. I don't know.
Oh, there's what like six it? Examples
To Kill a
here.
Mockingbird so or something? Or like...
No, so the earliest one this says here is
the monkey
Anatomy
trial.
Of a Murder.
Oh, okay.
So something called Anatomy of a Murder from 1959. Then we also have Inherit the Wind, 1960, with Spencer Tracy. We have Matlock. We love you, too.
Matlock!
He's our simple country lawyer. God damn it. My Cousin Vinny, A Time to Kill, and of course everybody's favorite hyper chicken, Futurama. We have Stiv Bators. The Flight of the Monarch refers to the Stiv Bators, Lydia Lunch, yada yada yada. He was the lead singer of the seminal punk band The Dead Boys and a goth rock supergroup Lords of the New Church. He died in 1990 after getting hit by a taxi.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. Let's see here. The Trial of the Incredible Hulk is the what this is referencing. Stan Lee made his very first live-action cameo as the jury foreman in that episode.
Oh, so it's Incredible Hulk that's to blame. I see.
Yes. I want to say this has got to be as an homage to that. The series creators Jackson Publick and Doc Hammer make similar cameos in this episode as members of the jury. I have to imagine they're two of the ones that are animated in there, which is excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
They also cite the Wizard of Oz as the Sovereign's Head, potentially. Instead of being Zordon, it could also be the Wizard of Oz. Tom of Finland. The monarch derisively compares a uniformed police officer to a Tom of Finland character. Tom of Finland was a Finnish artist known for his stylized, highly masculinized, homoerotic fetish art and for his influence on late 20th century gay culture. Okay. So, there you go. Tom Selleck, Magnum P.I., we already got that. Oh, man. Last one in here, buddy.
Oh, I know Tom of Finland. Okay. I know. Okay. Not that I know him, but I am familiar with... I looked him up. Yeah, I'm familiar with that work.
Yeah. But do you hear this, buddy? You hear my polite golf claps here for you. My very last one here from the wiki.
Tom of Finland again?
I am not. That hardened, crystallized stuff is in fact not my seed. But it must be something else because here I am clapping to you and your correct assumption of Total Recall 1990. The character of Tiny Attorney is a parody of Quato, the character in the movie Total Recall. So, attaboy. Okay, any other that you can think of before we move on? Hot damn, this has been a very, like, reference-heavy bit this week. God.
Well, that's where like I was. I didn't have a lot of Rusty Ventures, but I had a ton of parodies and references. Yeah, and yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings us to Who's That Guild Member?
Who's That Guild Member?
Who's That Guild Member?
All right, so I have three of these here that I feel like I want you to kind of keep an eye out for. And let's see, one of them is going to be easy because he'll be around for a little while. One of them is going to be a little less easy because you won't see them for a little bit. And then one of them is a story through line that technically starts in this episode. So, the Sovereign. Keep an eye out for the Sovereign, right? He's going to show up. This is the first time we've seen the head of the Guild of Calamitous Intent, right? Like, he works with the Council of 13. He's the one that's kind of in charge of this whole shebang. Like, he keeps everybody looking fancy. If the OSI needs to talk to anybody about anything, they try and talk to members of the 13. If not, they will try and get a hold of him. He's a big deal, right? Like, he runs the whole show. The Murderous Moppets, you will not see for a while, but once they show up again, you will see them, and they will be here forever, pretty much. Because they were former accomplices and essentially underlings or henchmen to Dr. Girlfriend when she was Lady Au Pair, not when she was Madame Wisteria.
Etheria.
What the fuck is it?
Etheria.
Thank you, God. I don't know why I keep fucking that up. So the Moppets are going to show up again and concurrently, right? Like, you're going to see them. They will be the Murderous Moppets yet again, and you're going to absolutely love Tim Tam and Kevin. Like, okay, if you don't get an animal and name one of them Tim Tam or Kevin after this, I'd be very, very surprised. And finally, we have Phantom Limb and Dr. Girlfriend. That is, they hinted at this already, right? Throughout this episode, and I think Monarch has said something before, like, didn't you know Phantom Limb? Yeah, I was with him for a little bit, like...
Well, we saw it just in a tag sale.
Yes. Yeah, she had mentioned, but she was very cagey around it, like, didn't go into details.
Yes. Yeah, very.
Now we know why.
Dude, again, man, you get that, like, sorry to totally cut you off here, but we were talking just, you know, last episode, like, that setup and payoff of Brock Sampson killing his roommate in college, or the quarterback in college and shit. Same thing, dude. This is, I like this. I like this little bit, the way they're, like, seeding these kind of storylines. They're doing a really solid job. I almost feel like when we do season one, I need to go back and rewatch season one just to, like, see how many timelines we actually strung together.
Right. No, exactly. This would be a very fun one for you to immediately rewatch when the series is done, just to see how everything connects early on. Because I feel like they do a pretty good job about this. Like, it's pretty organic. Like, you don't feel like you're being force-fed something. You also don't feel like they're leading you into a whole bunch of crazy shit, which is excellent. It's just very, very nicely done. But anyway, so the relationship between Phantom Limb and Dr. Girlfriend. I want you to keep an eye on that, because it's going to be ongoing. This is really the first time it's introduced, right? Now that she is officially not with the monarch anymore. Just keep that on your radar, okay? All right, we are to Brock's Kill of the Week now, and I have one for this episode that we can add to the two we had, my two from the other one. And it's Brock giving it to the golem right in the stones.
So I had a similar one. It was the talus testicular trauma. So whatever you want to do. I kind of like giving it to it. I think I like golem's stones better.
You do whatever you want to do, buddy. I'm very happy whenever I can make a stupid pun like that and I can get you to chuckle a little bit. Even if nobody else gets to hear it but you and me, I'm still in for it.
Well, you would you agree to breaking the golem's balls?
Yes.
Okay, that is what we are marking that as then.
Excellent. All right, so we've got our three for this week. Do we want to do our big, long list? And please, I know I tempted you last week by saying don't do this all in one breath, but let's see how we can rock and roll this, buddy.
Oh, yeah, no, I have since put up my hubris, and I will not be attempting all this in one breath, but what is Brock Samson's best fight? Well, from the bottom now, we're here in Trouble at Turtle Bay. There's a mummy in the landing gear. There's a gator in the landing gear. There's a beating down muggers with a door. Dia de los Dangerous showed us Checkers Auto Parts. The parking lot dart battle. The chupacabra killing a plane. Rusty venturing in the Monarch's lair. Careers in science. Putting the Phantom Spaceman in the pretzel bender. And strong arming Man Strong in space. Hey, it only took me 6 weeks, but I finally fucking said it like a not dumb shit. The talented Mr. Brisby. Mandalay in the hallway. Molotov cocktease and the duvet of death. The bathroom dick beat down. Beat down in the beehive, eeny, meeny, miny, magic, mind-blowing fireworks sock, ninja cowboy dream massacre, ghost of the Sargasso, pirates on the X2, murder on the poop deck and burning down the ship, ice station impossible, polar bear arctic ass kick, midlife chrysalis, the murder memories montage featuring death darts harpooning shark man, Sub-Zero and Molo Colt cocktail kill, still can't say that one right, and destroying Dean in training. Are you there, God? It's me, Dean. The Monarch's birthday gift beat 'em up. Tag sale, you're it. Did not participate. Past tense was the ass-kicking echo across time and sacking the quarterback. Finally, rounding out with the trial of the Monarch, breaking the golem's balls. I once again need to come down on the Molotov cocktease and the duvet of death. That is still the best fucking Brock Samson kill I have seen to date. How do you feel about these things, Johnny?
Maybe I'm just a sucker for poo-poo humor, right? Like, I've watched one too many Adam Sandler movies. I think I might have a new one here with the golem just getting his own fist in his own balls. I think I've got to give it to that one.
Okay. I'll take it.
at least for now, for this season so far, like, I think that's now my reigning champion. Because that is just, that's next level.
All right. I like it.
Excellent.
Stop killing yourself.
You're right. It'd only be better if they were still doing their Mecha Shiva. Mark, what do you rank this episode?
So I don't think I've done this one yet, but this is an absolutely positively you just need to have something in you. Because I watched this, and again, I'm not mad at the episode. I'm not faulting the episode. Yeah. I just hate... I like it, but it jumps around a lot. And honestly, if you're going to make me jump around this much, I need just a little bit of that, like, mental lubrication in the form of a touch of the THC or just a drop of the sauce. But it's not a dabble do me because, like, nothing happens this week, right? There's no consequence. You said, like, it'll come up later, but, like... This episode, I think, might be the first time that nothing that has happened seems like it really matters. Like, Monarch's going to get out of prison. Big who cares? Like,
is he?
And it's also, like, okay. I'm just assuming so. Like, is he going to fucking run his grandma's ashes base from prison? Because I'm ready to see that. That's cool. I'm in. But, like, I'm not saying there's no consequences for our actions, but, like, I'm just kind of curious to see, more than anything, like, how this will play out and pan out in the future. And really, I don't know how much it will, and I don't really care how much it will. It was weird and jumpy aroundy, and, like, this one does feel like the most inconsequential one we've watched up until now. And I would say, yeah, just go crazy. You can have four beers in you and get the exact same out of this as you would doing it stone sober.
Interesting. Okay. So I will tell you that my ranking for this is a fun addition. It's not a must have. It's a fun addition here. Part of this is because I have seen this and I do know what it implicates for the future, right? Therein lies the difference between you and I, because I have seen the majority of the rest of these, right? And you have not. But that being said, I 100% agree that on a first viewing, this would have been a must have. It is hard to watch sometimes because it just feels like, cool, this is just a bunch of like childish, he said, she said jokes, and we're going to get to hear the monarch like get really pissed off about some stuff and then make fun of him for it. That seems like the bulk right. of this episode.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I came down on it, was you just, it doesn't matter. It's childish, exactly, yeah. Sorry, I totally cut you off, sorry.
No. I'm glad you added to it. But yeah, like, really, that's what it is. It doesn't start really having ramifications until you look at the side characters and the stuff that's happening in the back, right? The whole idea of the guild coming in and freezing everybody, and you've been set up this whole episode, you've seen them show up into the courtroom and they're starting to infiltrate everything, and you think, oh yeah, they're coming to get Doc Venture or they're coming to get the Monarch. And when it ends up being the tiny attorney, which I totally forgot happened, I'm like, oh shit, that's right. They're not going after those other two. It just kind of puts into perspective where certain characters are on their radar. So I don't know, it's... From somebody who's seen a lot of this, like, I feel like you can get some more perspective on the guild priorities if you really look into this. And so in my mind, I'm like, cool, if you really want to search and hunt for it, it's there. But also, on a first viewing, you're not going to want to do that because you're not going to understand or need to know why you should be doing that yet. So it's definitely, on a first run through it, I could see it being a must-have, right? On a second one, when you're trying to kind of nail down the line or sequencing of things, maybe not so much, but no, good call, man. Good call. We've watched them. We've rated them. We've done our whole shebang. I think the only thing that's left to do, Mark, is I got to ask you, has this started to weave its way into your Mount Rushmore yet? Are we to that point? Do I need to just stop asking you this every single week and wait until at the end of the season?
No, because I like you're asking me every week because I like the through line of continuity, but also... Boy, it's getting close. Really, last episode, not this one, but past tense. Wow, John, I'm a sucker for origin story, and that episode just, like, kicked that part in my brain and dumped all that sweet, sweet dopamine into my head, and I was just all about it. So it's like, it's getting there, dude. Like, if nothing right. else, I am, you know, if nothing else, there's a dude in my office, and I'm the president of the United States, and he's going, hey, we ought to build this monument on Indian land of the founding fathers, you know, the guys that, you know, genocided and massacred him. It'll be a racist monument for centuries. And I'm like, yeah, all right, cool, I'm Howard Taft. Let's talk about this, yeah.
I liken this to the idea that in about 10 to 15 years from now, you and I are also going to be explaining to somebody in some way, shape, or form how we started our podcast empire, and it's all going to start very similar as this, right? Yeah, we did a bunch of stupid shit in college.
Yes.
So, that's always super yes. nice. Excellent. Well, this is very, very much seriously hard up there in mine. That's no shock to anybody. It is what it is. But, cool. Well, I'm going to get us rolling here with our plugs because I, you know, why not? It's our show and I can seize fucking control if I want to sometimes. Guys, you can always reach out to the Dang Old Venture Boys. We are Dang Old Podcast on all sorts of platforms. We're Dang Old Podcast on Gmail. We're on Instagram. I think we're somewhere still on X Twitter. But, you know, you gotta, as Mark always says, if you're not a sex bot, you have to prove it to us. Otherwise, we're not going to believe you. You can always reach out to us on Blue Sky. We are High Hammock Radio on Blue Sky. And I am on Blue Sky and on Instagram if you ever want to get a hold of me personally. I am Krautball. Kraut as in sauerkraut and ball as in Swedish meatball. Now, Mark, if I may be so bold, when this comes out, I know our Loose Robes is coming up pretty quick here, right?
It ought to be. Yeah.
Well, then, do you mind if I plug the ever so fantastic flagship show of the High Hammock Radio Network?
Bitta, baby, bitta.
Guys, go and watch, and by watch, I mean listen, to the Two Wizards podcast, right? It is a two-person variety podcast where we stare into the void so that you don't have to. By the time this comes out, you should be hearing from the other two wizards of High Hammock Radio. That's right, me and Brad. We're going to do a fun little one-off episode for you of World of Warcraft. We talked an awful lot about Warcraft, and honestly, it did more harm than good because I've been talking to my co-host, Brad, and hot damn, is it really hard not to continue to pay Blizzard money to pay their damn game, and I thought that monkey was off my back, and all it took was 2 hours of talking about it to go, that's right, you're right, hooked back on the crack again. Let's do it. Let's just get right back on that pony. It's fantastic.
Oh, God, guys, it's fantastic. I'm a codependent enabler. I got you back on the sauce. Yes, I'm so sorry.
You kind of did, and it's okay. I'm okay with this. But, guys, if you don't care to listen to just Brad and I, please go back and listen to the 3+ years of content that Mark and Josh have done for you. Also, I want to throw a real quick shout out here. Congratulations to Josh. He made a monumental achievement in his own personal life. You guys will probably hear about it somewhere on one of our media platforms. But anyway, Mark, where else can these guys listen to you that's not the Two Wizards and not the Dang Old Venture Boys?
Well, right now, the only other place you could find me is on the I Can't Wait to Show My Kids podcast, where the aforementioned Brad and I celebrate cinema and fill in gaps in our knowledge by showing each other movies that were influential and foundational to us, but the other one hasn't seen, and we talk about them, and we discuss why they're so great, and then we talk about, well, when do we show this to our kids? We just cut our 1 year anniversary award show, in which we featured special guests and talked about all the cool shit we have seen over the year. Go check us out there. Let us know what you want to hear in the future. You can find me at Marky Stardust on Twitter, and hey, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for having us be a part of your day. And Johnny, I think it's time for me to re-unrest arresting control and just say, go Team Venture.